very grateful to be with all of you in this very holy place, during this very holy conference. It is the greatest wealth in all of creation to be given precious moments in the association of sincere seekers of the truth. Open our minds, open our hearts, and actually connect with, experience who we really are. When I was 19 years old, I first came to the Himalayas. That was in 1970. The first day I was here, I had no money. I had just hitchhiked overland from London. It took 6 months. In a couple weeks, I'm going to take a flight that covers the exact distance from India to London, and it takes 9 hours. But when I hitchhiked back in 1970, it was much more scenic, much more life-changing, and I didn't have a safety belt, so it was much more dangerous. But there is a price. There oftentimes is a price to access grace. And that price is the eagerness, the openness, and the willingness to receive it. As I traveled through the forests and the jungles of the Himalayas, my first day, I was sitting on the bank of the Ganga, not far from here. At that time, it was a very, very secluded place. In fact, I was living in a cave, and recently I went back to find that cave, and there's something like a hotel there. Things do change. I was sitting alone, there was no human being anywhere to be seen, hour after hour. It was my first day, and one sadhu, holy man, he came out of the forest. And he walked right up to me. He had long white hair and long white beard and flowing white robes that were rippling in the breeze of Mother Ganga. And he said, "You do not know who I am, but I know who you are. I have been watching your determination. Now take off your clothes and offer them in the current of Mother Ganga." Now I only had one set of clothes because I was escaping someone who was trying to kill me in Afghanistan, and I didn't have time to pick up my little bag. I had a pair of gray jeans and gray turtleneck shirt with black pinstripes, and it's amazing when you only have one set of clothes that you're wearing month after month, how you really identify. It really becomes a part of you. something like the body. Some see Janani Adavihaya. The Gita explains that the body is like a set of clothes. And when we identify with it for so long, we really think, I am this body. And we become very attached. And we wear this body longer than we wear clothes. So how much attachment can be there? And he told me, I will give you the robes of a sadhu. I said, what is a sadhu? I never heard the word before. He said, a sadhu is one who is a homeless wanderer seeking the truth. And he had two strips of cloth, just like sheets. And I thought, this must be God's arrangement. So I took off my pants and tossed them into the very swift current of Ganga. It was gone. Forever. Then I took off my shirt and threw it. Gone. I was standing in my underpants. And he said, offer your underpants. This was becoming a serious surrender for me. My underpants? Because in those days, there was not free trade between India and any other country. I was thinking, there may not be another pair of underpants for 10,000 miles from me. Underpants is kind of like the mind and the intelligence. It's like the subtle body that's under the gross body. That's even more attached to that. And I kind of looked at him with apprehension. And he took these two little strips of cloth and said, these are the underpants sadhus wear. Kopan. It's a loincloth. So I took this lungi, this little sheet that he gave me, and I wrapped it around my waist according to his instruction. And from underneath, I took off my underpants. They were fruit of the loom underpants. And I offer them with a little prayer. Gone forever. And then he taught me how to put on the loincloth and everything else. He whispered in my ear. He said, Ganga will become your mother. This will be revealed to you in time. He turned around and walked back into the forest. I never saw him again. But after that, I sat on a rock in the Ganga. I would somehow or other kind of wade through the water to get to this rock and climb some other rocks from sunrise to sunset. And the precious lessons that I learned just from opening my heart to receive grace from Mother Ganga transformed my life. I didn't speak to a single person that whole month. But I learned more just sitting on that rock than I had learned in all my years in elementary school, high school, and my one semester of college before I came to India. I remember one time when I was coming back from the rock to my cave. There was a beautiful banyan tree on the way. And I was thinking, how incredible. What a miracle. Every tree is. As I was traveling around, I remember in Uttarkashi and Dev Prayag and all these places, I was meeting mystics who possessed supernatural powers. They could create ashes by chanting mantras. They could stop their heartbeat for a half hour and stop their breath. They could bend steel by pushing their eye against it. I was seeing all sorts of really incredible things. At first, it really impressed me. But after being around enough of these mystics for long enough, I saw people levitating. It kind of becomes ordinary. It's only that ordinary if you don't see it much. And this one mystic, he really liked me, because I was only a teenage boy, and he was taking me around with him, and he went to this one assembly near Dev Prayag, and he started performing these incredible supernatural feats. He opened his hand, then closed it, then opened it again, and chanted a mantra, and Shivalingam grew right out of his palm of his hand. Then he put it down on a podium and started chanting a mantra like this, and ashes started coming out and covered the entire Shivalingam. And people started running to him to worship him as God. And he said, actual yoga, the real point of it, is not to do these things. It's to understand the eternal nature of the soul and understand our connection to the divine, to God, and to find true peace in that, true happiness. And then he took the ashes and threw them at the people. And he said, I create ashes, God creates universes. I thought that was quite honest of him. And then he came up to me and he chanted a mantra and gave me a Rudraksha bead, and I went back into the forest. And I was sitting under a similar banyan tree as I was telling you about. And I was thinking about how miracles are all around us at every moment. But we see them so often, we don't even appreciate them. I was looking at a seed from a banyan tree, and I picked it up, that the Lord has put an entire gigantic banyan tree in this little seed. What a miracle. And I looked up and there was a big cloud. How? I was around during the monsoons. One cloud could have so much water, it floods an entire city. And yet the water contained in that cloud is so light, it's floating in the air, and a wind pushes it to another place. It would take millions of trucks to transport that much water into a city as one floating cloud. And every human being, when a man and a woman come together, it's not that they have an engineered master plan of how the body's going to grow. They usually don't even know what's happening. The semen and the ovum get mixed together, and then all of a sudden, body starts to grow, eyes and ears and lungs and heart and brain. Every person we see is an incredible miracle. How we've come to be, every tree, every plant, every flower. A little seed, which has no fragrance at all, mixes with some earth and water, and it comes out a wonderful rose. A lotus flower with texture and fragrance, every vegetable. Life is nothing but one miracle after another. If only we just open our hearts to appreciate. I was asked to speak on yoga, integrating the mind, body and the intelligence. If we understand the miracle of our mind and our body and our intelligence, and understand where the force of consciousness is coming from that animates them, then our lives could be transformed. The Bhagavad Gita explains, Bhumir apo nalo vayu kamano buddhar evacha ahankara iti ame bhina prakritarashtata. Krishna tells that there are eight material elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, space. They are the gross elements that we can sensually perceive. We can see, smell, hear, taste, touch. And then there are the subtle material elements: the mind, the intelligence, and the ahankar, the ego. And then it goes on, aparayam itashpanyam prakritim vidimeparam jiva bhutamahabaho yayedam taragate jagat. That besides these external material elements, there is the Atma, the Jiva, the living force, the soul that is the source of life, who's seeing through the eyes and hearing through the ears and tasting through the tongue and touching through the flesh and thinking through the mind and reasoning through the intelligence. What is the nature of that living force? Na jayate mriyate va kadachit. The nature of that living force within all of us, who we really are, is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, sachit ananda. And when that living force, the true you and me, depart from this physical body, the body is like an automobile without a driver. Everything's there for a while, but nobody's there to see through the windshield, and nobody's there to honk the horn, and nobody's there to move around on the four tires. To understand who we are is the beginning of true knowledge. The nature of the Atma, according to the Brahma Sutra, is anandamayo vyasa. Wherever there's life, there is a search for pleasure. Whether it's a little insect, or whether it's a big elephant, or whether it's a human being, whatever our sex, or whatever our nationality, or our religion, everyone's looking for pleasure and everyone's looking for the solution to pain. Why do we not like pain? Because it interrupts our pleasure. And we are pleasure-seeking beings. Unless we find that pleasure within our own hearts, we cannot find that pleasure anywhere in this world. Things cannot bring pleasure to the soul or the heart. They could give some flickering pleasure to the mind and senses. In this sense, the Gita teaches us that real yoga is to harmonize the body, the mind, the intelligence with the true nature of the self, the Atma, the soul. In senses, very powerful force, the objects of the senses have like a magnetic attraction to the mind, and so often become enamored to things that are even unhealthy. The Gita says, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehena rasa bharajam rasopyasya param drispani bhartata. We can master control of the mind and senses only when we experience something higher. Simple negation is not enough. but to experience a higher taste. I remember one mother was telling me that she tried, because she had to go out and do so many chores in her house, she had a room that she wanted to make completely safe for her little child. So she made sure there was no sharp corners and there was no possible way that child could hurt himself in the room. And then she put him in it, and she went out to do her chores, and she came back just a few minutes later, and the child, somehow or other, just like a couple-year-old boy, he found a razor blade. She didn't even know where he found it, but he found a razor blade somewhere in that room that she didn't even see. And she said, it's like he has some mystic power to find a way to get in trouble. And he wouldn't let go of the lay razor blade. So she was thinking, now what am I going to do? If I try to grab it out of his hand, we're both going to get cut. So she gave him a piece of candy. And the child immediately threw the razor blade down to eat the candy. So this is the simple process of giving up bad habits and dangerous habits, is to have to experience something higher. You have all seen many monkeys here around Rishikesh. I'd like to tell you the story of a monkey. And after that story, I'll teach you the lesson that I want to share with you. It was the first time my mother and father ever came to India. When I first came to India in 1970, I was supposed to come back to America from a trip in Europe after 2 months. And 6 months, 4 months later, they got a letter from me in Iran that I was hitchhiking to India. So they were quite heartbroken, and they were totally devastated, because I sent them no return address. Anyways, somehow or other, when I did come back years later, I was a hardcore seasoned ascetic in the Hindu school of spirituality. They couldn't understand that at all. But eventually, in 1989, they came to India. And their hearts completely transformed. They just loved it. Their best friends in the world, even today, are here in India. But I decided to take them on a little sightseeing trip. So from Mumbai, there is an island called Elephanta. Have any of you ever been there? We take a boat to get to it. And we were walking, my mother, my father, and me, the Swami, and walking together. And we're walking along this little forest path to get to these ancient caves. And suddenly, a monkey jumped right in front of my mother and grabbed her purse. And she screamed. She said, all the valuables of your father and myself are in this purse. Their passports, their visas, their airline tickets, all their cash and all their credit cards, everything was in that purse. And the monkey pulled it, and she pulled, and he pulled, and she pulled. Then the monkey showed his sharp teeth and made that monkey sound. Very angry sound, and looked at her with such wrath in his eyes. And she was shaking. She said, what do I do? What do I do? And then the monkey leapt right into her face. And she was, to say the least, a middle-class American woman from the suburbs of Chicago. It was a serious culture shock for her. She let go of the purse and screamed, and the monkey grabbed it and ran away and climbed up a tree. and started opening it. And my mother and father looked at me like, you're the one who brought us here. This is the India you always wanted us to come to. So I didn't know what to do. I couldn't climb the tree of, you know, monkeys. They could jump anywhere. So I said a little prayer for guidance. And then I saw, just a little ways, there was a fruit vendor. So I ran over, and I didn't have any money, because actually I have no pockets. I haven't had a pocket in 40 years. And my parents didn't have any money. The monkey had all the money. So I asked this man to give me a banana. And he said, you know, so many rupees. And I said, rupee nay, I don't have any rupees. He said, you know. So I was desperate. I took the banana. He was screaming at me. I actually stole it. Sometimes, you know, in emergency situations, sometimes we rationalize things. So I took that banana. I knew I would never get another one from him, so I had one chance. And I showed it to the monkey. And he was, by then, looking in the purse to see what he was going to eat in the purse. And the monkeys could eat anything. It's nothing else. So I threw that banana up to him. And I'm not a good thrower. So it was a little distance away. And I picked up the purse and gave it back to my mother. I'll tell you a secret. In my entire life, I have never seen my mother and father more proud of me. My mother said, you are very intelligent. I don't remember her saying that too many times. And my father, he embraced me, my mother embraced me, said, that was great, you really saved us. And then my mother, she took out like some rupees and she said, don't forget to pay the fruit vendor for the banana. I forgot. And she had all the details very much in her heart. So I paid him back and I gave him enough for about 20 bananas. So he was very happy. So everyone was happy. I was happy, my parents were happy, the fruit vendor was happy, and I think the happiest of all of us was the monkey. He was eating a banana. So the mind is compared to a monkey. The mind is looking for pleasure. The mind is looking for satisfaction. And it can drive us crazy. Fear of death. Fear of betrayal, fear of broken relationships, and what to speak of all the aspirations for different types of experiences. And the mind jumps from one thought to another thought to another thought, trying to find pleasure. And directs the senses to follow its dictations. But if we give the mind a greater satisfaction, a deeper satisfaction, the Gita says, Bandhur atmanastasya yenatmaivatmanachita, that the mind that experiences this higher taste, the mind becomes our best friend. But the mind that is not controlled by this higher experience, the mind becomes potentially our worst enemy. That monkey became like a guru to me. And I remember months later when I came home to visit my parents in the Chicago area, all my relatives, all their friends, everyone was telling me how proud they were that I defeated the monkey. I didn't defeat the monkey. The banana defeated the monkey.
And they were telling me how proud. It's a simple lesson, but it's such an important lesson. That's what yoga is for, to experience that inner happiness of the soul, satchitananda. And the most fundamental need of every heart is to love and to be loved. In bhakti yoga, the simple process, which can incorporate, you know, every other type of yoga, is the spirit of loving service to the Lord, to experience the higher taste of seva. And what is seva? According to the great scriptures and the saints, seva is ahoitiki apratihata. Savaipung sang paro dharamo yato bhaktir dhokshaje. The supreme dharma, the Bhagavad Purana tells, is to connect, to access the infinite nature of the love in the heart, and to serve God with that love. And serving God with that love, it's compared in the Bhagavad to wanting the root of a tree. When you put your water of your affection on the root, then that water naturally extends to every part of the tree. The flowers, the twigs, the trunk, the leaves. When we actually connect with that prayer, that love within ourselves, spontaneously, naturally, it is expressed as satisfaction. Love for our own true self, and love for every other living being. Mamayam so jiva loke jiva bhuta samata. We're all part of that one supreme. Hanuman is the glorious example of seva. There's a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad. Atapu virkijastreshtas varna shramati bhakasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritosha. That whatever our occupation, whatever our religion, whatever anything we do in life, its real success is experiencing the fulfillment of giving pleasure to Lord Hari. Watering the root of the tree, by which we get the greatest satisfaction. And we can be instruments to give that satisfaction, that love to everyone and anyone, wherever we go. Sita is the feminine divinity. She is the feminine aspect of the one absolute truth. The Vedic literatures explain that God, or the supreme truth, is both male and female. Sita, or Lakshmi, or Radha, or Parvati, is the supreme lover. And Krishna, Ram, Narayan, is the supreme object of love. The feminine power of the Shakti of the Lord is the source of all grace. And it's through that grace that we connect to our own spiritual treasures. Ravana kidnapped Sita and took her to an island called Sri Lanka, where he wanted to exploit her and manipulate her, which is symbolic of a person who wants to exploit God's resources. In many ways, the ecological disasters that could be impending within this world of exploiting the resources of Mother Earth are similar to Ravana stealing Sita. Bhumi Devi, is an expansion of the feminine energy of the Lord. Bhumi Devi is the divine consort of the Lord within this creation. From the perspective of bhakti, caring for the earth, honoring the earth, respecting the earth, living in harmony. Supreme generator, power outs of all energies, has provided us this microphone. So Hanumanji, it was his only wish to please Sita. When he found out that Sita was across an ocean 800 miles away, it wasn't that he was just a good jumper. It's that he had such an enthusiasm, so much love and devotion to please the Lord, that nothing was impossible for him. He was empowered. He jumped across the entire ocean. And on the way, there were so many obstacles, temptations, and fears that were coming upon him, but nothing could dissuade him. There's a beautiful verse by Mother Kunti. Twai me nanya vishaya matir madhu pate sikrit rati udvahatat adar gange bogam udanvati. She prays, my dear Lord, she's praying to Krishna. As Mother Ganges, the Ganga, is flowing from the top of the Himalayas all the way to the sea without being diverted anywhere else, let my attraction be attracted to you in the same way. So Hanumanji, he jumped across the ocean. We don't have time to get into the details. While he was there, he searched everywhere. He found Sita crying under a shrub tree in complete dismay and separation from her Ram. He gave her Ram's ring. He pacified her heart. He sang the glories of Ram to her. He gave her hope and happiness. But he wanted to do something more. He tore down Ravana's favorite garden, knowing that he would be arrested. Which he was. He was bound with ropes, he was beaten, he was brought before Ravana. And then he told Ravana exactly what he thought of him. Return Sita, and you will live happily forever. If you don't, you'll be destroyed. Ravana couldn't bear that. He lit Hanuman's tail on fire, torture him, and ultimately kill him. Hanuman, he saw every situation as an opportunity to serve. Everything is so much according to our vision. We can see something as negative or something as positive. If we just look for the opportunity, seek and you will find. Knock and the door will open. So he took his burning tail, and somehow or other he escaped from the ropes that were binding him, and he jumped from one palace roof to the next, to the next, to the next, and everywhere he jumped, he touched his tail to it, and the whole building went on fire. He was burning the whole city down, just jumping like a monkey. Primo. And Ravana was helpless. And then Hanuman, after burning a major part of the city and nobody could do anything, he said, I am just the insignificant little servant of the servant of the servant of Ram. Wait till he comes. Better you return Sita. Then he jumped in the ocean, then he jumped all the way back, then he went to a mountaintop in Kishkindha Kshetra, which is today called Hampi. There's a mountain called Malyavanta, where Ram was living in a cave. And Hanuman gave him a whole report. And Ram heard it. Ram, the supreme absolute truth, Parabrahman, was weeping tears of gratitude for the seva of his devotee. And Ram said, I am in exile. I've lost my throne, I've lost my wealth, I have nothing to give you in return for all you've done for me. All I have is my embrace. And Ram, weeping tears of affection, embraced Hanuman. Hanumanji, weeping tears of affection, all of his desires were fulfilled. He did not want anything else. He pleased the Lord by his seva. He pleased the Lord by being an instrument of the Lord's compassion. That was the ultimate wealth, the ultimate satisfaction of the heart. And that same experience is within all of us. Yoga is to connect us with that experience. Bhakti is to receive the love of the Lord, chant of God's names, through hearing the Lord, through meditating on the Lord, and to express that love for our Savior. Thank you so very, very much. We are now out of time.